it's 0-2 mirror symmetry.
So I'd like to, I'd like to yell very loudly. I'd like to start by thanking the organizers for the invitation to talk. This is going to be based on work with a couple of people at Chicago, Anirban Basu and Sav Sethi from last year, and then more recent work that's in progress with Rene Reinbacher and a student, Morten Ehrenberg, at Harvard. This owes a great deal to the work of Hori and Vafa in the more familiar worldview derivations of mirror symmetry. And I'm going to take very much a sort of string theorist worldview point of view in this talk, but I'll try to tell you what I mean by the things that are more intuitive. So string theory can be thought of as a map from geometries to 4D physics. And one of the most spectacular predictions of string theory is that this map is in general many to one. Two totally different geometries can give rise to totally different, or to identical 4D effective physics. So this is one early notion of mirror symmetry. So in the stringy world, this is best understood in terms of 2-2 sigma models. 2-2 sigma models on these geometries, on these Clausius targets, or in general Fano varieties, in which mirror symmetry is realized as an outer automorphism of the world sheet symmetry algebra. So you have a 2-2 symmetry, supersymmetry algebra on the world sheet. It's a faithfully realized symmetry, and there's an outer automorphism. It does an interesting thing. It switches the manifold to its mirror. However, in the space of all possible compactifications of the heterotic string, these 2-2 compactifications form a set of measure 0, in particular within the larger class of 0-2 supersymmetric theories. So you can think of roughly the set of the moduli space of 2-2 theories as being a very small sublocus of larger space of 0-2 supersymmetric theories. Now I'll define these, what I mean by 2-2 and 0-2 in a bit. But first let me tell you about the geometry and how these sigma models differ, how these string theories differ. First, 0-2 models differ in an extremely important way. Instead of just being a sigma model on a target, it's a sigma model for some interesting holomorphic vector bundle over that target. I'll be talking in general of either toric varieties of non-negative first string class or hypersurfaces or complete intersections therein. Most of the computations I'll be telling you about will be in toric varieties. If this bundle happens to be the tangent bundle, then we recover 2-2 supersymmetry. So clearly, any interesting moduli deforming the tangent bundle away from it take you away from the line of 2-2 theories into the space of 0-2 theories. The second very important difference is that due to the decreased world sheet supersymmetry, these models in general suffer from many more world sheet instanton corrections. That's actually going to turn out to be critical for the constructions that we build, which in general makes computations much harder. There are still perturbative number normalization theorems, but there are many, many more world sheet instanton contributions that you might have to worry about. In fact, for a long time, it was worried that 0-2 theories in general didn't exist, that they were totally destabilized by world sheet instantons, since a relatively recent result that for special classes of 0-2 theories, world sheet instantons don't destabilize you. In particular, 0-2 theories flowing from gauge linear sigma models, which I'll be building for you. Those will be the class that I'll be studying. But they do lead to a more rich structure, these more non-trivial world sheet instanton corrections. And I'll be getting into that in some great detail. A third and very, very important aspect of these 0-2 theories, which is a little bit sad, but is that they don't admit fully topological twists. In the normal story, we have the A twist and the B twist, and they both have their nice rings, which are exchanged under mirror symmetry. In the case of 0-2 models, we only have a right-moving supersymmetry in the world sheet. We have no left-moving supersymmetry. So you can't form a completely topological theory. If you twist by taking one of these scalar supercharges to be a BRS operator, then you get a theory of holomorphically varying observables. So this is not, in general, a fully topological field theory depending or with a finite dimensional target space, like the A or the B model, but in general, a conformal field theory. So that makes computations significantly more complicated in general. On the other hand, they do admit this a half twist, which is conformal, and which computes various things familiar from the 2-2 case, Yukawa couplings, more to the point. For special cases, such as deformations of the tangent bundle, they will still have ring structures. They will be, in general, for deformations of the tangent bundle, they will, in general, be deformations of the A model ring on the tangent bundle. So since we can often think of the A model ring as defining a quantum version of the cohomology ring, and I'll be very precise about what I mean by that later, or at least very precise for a physicist, these 0-2 theories with in the special cases where these ring structures do persist, allow us to define an extension of the quantum cohomology to a cohomology for the Dobbo operator twisted in the bundle over our target space. So my goal in this talk is to extend the worldsheet tools relatively familiar from the 2-2 context to this more general case of 0-2 compactifications with bundles over manifolds in a computationally to define or construct a computationally effective notion of mirror symmetry. By computationally effective, I mean we should be able to compute things like the ring relations without having to do explicit instant font sums. And we'll see that this is a fully doable thing for toric varieties. For hypersurfaces, the technology turns out to be a bit more challenging. I might discuss that at the end, assuming I don't run over. So then, once I show you this machinery, I'd like to use this to compute various examples, such as quantum cohomology of the Dobbo operator on deformations of tangent bundles. Along the way, we'll see how these quantities would be computed if we didn't have this generalization of mirror symmetry through a direct half-twisted model instanton sum. I might not go into too much detail on that because it's pretty hideous. It gets into worldsheet technology. Suffice it to say that this is something that can be done and that you can do to explicitly check some of these conjectures. In a more mathematically careful presentation, Sheldon has reproduced many of these results, and we'll be talking about them tomorrow. Before I go on to give you the technology, so this is definitely going to be a technology talk. I'm just going to hand you some machines. Before I proceed, let me give you a taste of results that I want to get by writing down some example predictions. So, for example, and I'm going to be a little imprecise here, but I'll tell you what deformations I mean in a minute. For deformations of the tangent bundle of P1 cross P1, a case that was in the paper with Basu and Sethi. So the undeformed chiral ring for P1 cross P1, quantum cohomology anyway, the quantum ring, can be written in this form, with these vanishing in the classical and the large volume limit, classical limit. Adding in a bundle deformation deforms these ring relations, and one in particular, which I'll specify in more detail later when we have the notation developed, will be of the form alpha x x tilde. We'll see explicitly that instanton corrections generate these sorts of deformations, and I'll try to give you a map, and a computationally effective map, to determine what these coefficients are. Okay, at this point I'm going to depart from what I usually do, because giving you a long commentary on the physical worldsheet theories would be sort of like talking theology to a lawyer. Instead, I'm going to give you a listing of the ingredients, tell you what goes into the black box, give you a rough schematic for how my black box works, and a lengthy accounting of some of its current limitations, then give you some examples, and we'll see where that leaves us. Questions on the basic outline? Yeah, good. So what is a 0-2 theory? What do I mean by a 0-2 theory? It's a 1 plus 1 dimensional, let me just say, work Euclidean, it's a 2-dimensional quantum field theory, which has a right moving n equals 2 supersymmetry algebra, which means for our purposes that we have two charges, q plus and q plus bar, both of which are nilpotent, and which commute to the derivative, q plus. By plus, I mean right moving in the two-dimensional sense. Furthermore, it comes equipped with an R symmetry, a U1 symmetry, whose generator I'll call F, q plus, and similarly for q plus bar, it's plus q plus bar. I'll leave it at that. The important thing, and we're going to see this works, the ground states of this theory, which means the, if you will, the highest weight states in the algebra, in the representation, correspond to elements of the cohomology of Q. There's a special set of operators in this theory, which I'll call chiral. And they're operators which are annihilated by the right-moving supercharge. And they have a very important property. And that's that the operators, so these are in general defined at some point, the worldsheet, OY1, OYN. If these are all chiral, any correlator I compute is actually independent of the insertion points. So this is what's going to be a very key ingredient to defining the ring relations that I'm going to define later. So this is going to be telling me something intrinsically about the target space because it doesn't depend on the world sheet theory at all. Okay, finally, the most important fact about this right-moving n equals 2 symmetry is that in these theories, these correlators, correlators of chiral operators, receive no perturbative corrections in the world sheet theory. Significant spell. However, they will receive world sheet instanton corrections, and I'll get to that in a minute. But before I do, let me tell you what zero-two theories compute. First, more familiar example. So the kind of 2-2 or 0-2 theories we're interested in will be nonlinear will be sigma models in general, linear or nonlinear. That we'll be starting out with linear sigma models, so these will be this will be a constant diagonal metric. But it will be some nonlinear sigma model on the target X. And in the familiar case of 2-2 supersymmetry, or standard world sheet theories, type 2 theories, we also have fermions, which take values in at, well, which are valued as sections of the tangent bundle. And actually, to be a little more precise, they're spinners on the world sheet. So push forward the target space map of Px. So in general, correlators of these will correspond to products of sections. And this is where our, from taking non-trivial examples, we'll get our cohomology computations. Okay, so again, these in general will take, well, let me start with, with the 2-2. Furthermore, the ground states, so the states annihilated by Q plus, which I'll call bar, are in one-to-one correspondence with elements of the cohomology of the Dolbeau operator of X. And in general, we'll be looking at real cohomology, whatever. So they're in one-to-one correspondence with elements of the Dirac cohomology. Kill that, because we're not going to be just looking at the zero-two. So in particular, the supercharge is the thing that gets mapped over to the Dolbeau operator, Q bar. So the utility of this structure is that by studying these protected operators in the world sheet theory, we'll get interesting information about the cohomology. In the 0-2 theory, this changes only slightly. Instead of looking at the tangent bundle, we'll be looking at some interesting vector bundle V. And now this cohomology is no longer going to be just the regular Dirac cohomology. It's going to be the cohomology of the Dolbeau operator, but now twisted in the vector bundle. And in particular, if we're looking in the N fermion sector, let's call it M fermion sector, this is in the nth exterior power of the vector bundle. I'm sorry? In general, it's not. In general, it's not. So in particular, so the condition for there to be a finite dimensional subset of, so what I'd like to say is the following. Take the A model on a Clausius. Deform the tangent bundle away from being the tangent bundle, get a 0-2 model. If you're lucky, and I'll write down the condition that you need in a moment, if you're lucky, the A model ring goes over to a finite dimensional closed subring of the half-twisted model. I'm sorry. Yes. Okay, and let me come back to that in a bit, but yes. Good. So the moduli in these theories, or the set of states that we'll be interested in, are going to be the familiar Kähler and complex complex moduli in H1 of X and H1 of x with values in the tangent bundle, as well as now the vector bundle deformations, which are in h1 of x with values endomorphisms of v. So these are the guys that are deforming us away from being, in general, a 2-2 theory. So again, these theories are subject to corrections from Wollstonecraft instantons. And because there are no perturbative corrections, we just get the classical results if it weren't for these Wollstonecraft instanton contributions. So let's see, where's this? OK. Where is it? Ah, thank you. Indeed. So what are the Wollstonecraft instanton corrections? So these are very similar to the familiar story from 2-2. In general, it's some non-trivial map from the world sheet, the target space, and now to the total space of the bundle, characterized by some instanton number n, which is just the pullback to the world sheet of the target space Kähler form, and these instantons come weighted by some action. Where this is the familiar complexified phi parameter Kähler class. Now, the contributions of from these Wollstonecraft instantons to various correlators, in particular to correlators of our observables in the half-twisted topological field theory, semi-topological field theory, are constrained by a number of important quantities. In particular, this right-moving U1 symmetry, this R current, still protects us tremendously. If you count the number of zero modes of right-moving zero modes in the n instanton sector, you get a constraint because the R symmetry must be respected by the theory. And the instantons generate some number of zero modes, and the zero modes are charged under this U1R symmetry. The constraint has a nice form. It tells you that dmx is 1 minus g plus n c1 of x. And really, I'm going to be a little more careful. Must be equal to zero. Or it must absorb this number of zero modes. So this is really nice, because it's telling you that in the classical sector, so let's look classically in the string theory, so gene is zero, and classically in the world sheet theory, which is zero instanton sector, this tells you that the number of right-moving zero modes, which map over to elements of the cohomology of there must be dim x of them, which just tells you that this must be a top form, which is great because you know you should be able to integrate only a top form. Now, if you look at the left-moving fermions, which aren't related to the tangent bundle by supersymmetry, you get a very similar formula. You get now that dim v times 1 minus g plus n times c1 of the deformed bundle, there must be this many left-moving zero modes. Now, since dim is the same as rank for a holomorphic vector bundle, again, we see the constraint that in the classical limit with n and g both zero, we have to get, again, a top form. So the upshot is that the correlators in our theory are now easily mapped to the following cohomology elements. Anything interesting we'd like to calculate in terms of chiral operators can be written, is now given as a map, h star of x and 1, e, such that this must have anti-holomorphic degree given by this index, and the sum of the MIs, or the holomorphic degree, must be given by this index computation. So this gives us a nice ring relation on these cohomology clusters. Okay, if C1 is not zero, it's easy to see that a linear combination of the currents whose anomalies are computed by these indices, it's easy to see that there is a combination of these currents which is non-anomalous, which is completely preserved, which is in fact exactly preserved. And so that's exactly what tells us that even away from conformality, there exists a notion of this cohomology ring which receives correlations, or which receives contributions from many different correlation products, not just the classical contribution, but from world seed instanton corrections as well, which, since the only corrections are world seed instantons, must go over in the classical limit, the classical cohomology ring. This is what we mean by the quantum cohomology ring. Again, I'm making some assumptions about the existence of such a ring. It's a very special thing in a 0-2 theory that you have such an object, but I'll get to that. I suspect that Sheldon will have quite a bit to say about that. So this leads to a natural question, which is, what does the coefficient of the instanton sum count? So thinking now in the case, in the conformal case, so for Clavier, in the familiar 2-2 example, we have the familiar slogan that it counts holomorphic curves, a phrase that has to be said a little more precisely. In the 0-2 case, let me give you a flavor for what's going on. So take the n-instanton sector moduli space, and the sections of the left-moving fermions, which I'll call for the moment chi minus, sorry, the zero modes of the left-moving fermions, which again are sections of the vector bundle, V, the holomorphic vector bundle, defined by pullback of the evaluation, a vector bundle over Mn, which I'll call Vn over Mn. And the quantum mechanics, the string theory on the original string theory leads to an effective quantum mechanics on this moduli space, and in particular on the bundle over the moduli space of n instantons. So in particular, the theory of these zero modes is exactly that sigma model on the moduli space with the supercharge on this theory acting as the Dolbeau operator twisted in, again, products of now the bundle of Vn. Oops, I'm going to call this Vn. Exterior powers of Vn. So what is this coefficient, what is this instanton sum computing? So we're summing over instantons. And for each instanton sector, we're getting a sum m minus 1 to the m, these are Fermi zero modes, times the index of this operator. Weighted by the instanton weight, 2 pi I n t. So in the usual 0-2 case, we just get the tangent bundle, and this gives us a computation of chi of m, or chi of x, excuse me. Oops, sorry, chi of m. Here we're seeing a 0-2 generalization of this. So these are the sorts of quantities that we're computing. It's very much like the familiar case, except in general the Dolbeau operator is twisted in the bundle. And here, again, when you're looking at the computations on the moduli space, there's a pullback to a bundle over the moduli space of n instantons. Mm-hmm. Sure, so if you have I can define, if I take an operator O at x, exactly. That's absolutely true. So it's on the other hand, you also know that that these correlation functions need to vary holomorphically. So if they're holomorphic, but they're also Q exact. So let me say it a little differently. In general, all the correlators are conformal field theory correlators. It's not like in the A model where they're completely independent. These are constrained to vary holomorphically. So in the 2-2 case, exactly as you say, in the 2-2 case, the correlators are independent of the position on the world tree. And in general, they vary holomorphically with the parameters of the theory. Here, we end up with a theory that varies only with correlators that vary only holomorphically on the coordinates in the world sheet. So in general, we get a conformal field theory. Because the nice upshot is that, so these are all related facts. The nice upshot is that even in a non-conformal theory, you can define the half twist. It is exactly conformal field theory. You can apply the techniques of conformal field theory. Now, when we look at this ring, it's only for very special operators that we're in fact going to have the correlators being independent of the world sheet positions, the world sheet insertions. Let me just say the following. I'd say two things. One is, it's in general not true. It's a special case for certain kinds for certain 0-2 models that this is in fact true. And in particular, I'll be looking at generalizations where it's a deformation of the EA model ring. The second is that there are ground states at the end of the day, and we do expect them to be zero modes. I mean, there are ground states which are independent of any particular insertion point on the world sheet theory. The thing that we don't know is that their operator products close. So the question is whether the OPEs amongst these states, amongst the operators creating these states, in fact close. So that's a condition on the OPEs. You can phrase that a little differently. So let me come back to exactly this point. But the condition for such a ring to exist, or a necessary if not sufficient condition for this ring to exist, is that the top exterior power of the vector bundle must tensor trivially with the canonical class. Okay, this allows. So basically, what we're going to do is we're going to map operators into each other using, or map the spectrum into itself using serduality. If this is not trivial, the spectrum doesn't get mapped into itself, and the ring doesn't close. That's right. It is in general a hard thing to. So this is a necessary but not sufficient condition. Is it sufficient in general? I don't. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know of an easy way to check other than computing correlators and looking. Which maybe is not so satisfying. So the biggest caveat to throw out here is that to the degree, and in those special cases that such a ring persists away from the 2-2 locus, and we definitely have cases where this is the case, here's a structure that will compute this data. Okay. Okay. And in particular, for the deformations of the tangent bundles that we'll be looking at, this is the case. Maybe a useful thing to say at this point is that the kind of sums, the kind of computations that we'd be doing if we did them directly would involve doing this set of world sheet instanton corrections, an infinite sum of world sheet instanton corrections in this conformal field theory, which is the half-twisted model. We don't want to do that. That's in general a hard thing to do. The more simple thing to do is to find a shortcut. And that's going to be the goal here. Okay, so let me give you the defining data for a 0-2 model, the kind of data we're going to put in, and then give you a sketch of the black box that's going to allow us to write down the mirror. So the defining data, we're going to have some set of fields, yi, there's going to be some gauge group, some products of u1s, and also some other multiplets, some fermions, which are left-moving fermions, fermion multiplets, satisfying a particular constraint, a chiral constraint, d bar plus gamma I is equal to sigma, where this is the field strength of these gauge fields times the E's. The details of this don't matter too much, if this doesn't look too familiar. The important thing is that there's an E here, which is a function in general in the coordinates. And I'll show you where this shows up in defining the bundle. The second bit of data that you have to specify, so there are charges associated with this U1 gauge group. Second bit of data is a function G, whose zero locus is the target we want, as well as a set of functions ji of phi. These together go into a superpotential, which is of the form some gamma naught plus some on I, gamma minus I. So this is the generalization of the 2-2 superpotential structure. Now, what is this data actually telling us? Well, what these functions E and J are doing can be encoded nicely in terms of the massless fermions. So we'd like to think about Massless fermions are supposed to correspond, roughly speaking, to sections of the tangent bundle or the vector bundle. So we'd like to know what bundles it is to which these guys couple. I should say that for the special case of two theories, the EI are just given by phi I, and the JI are given by DG D phi I. This will be important in a minute. So what are these bundles? So it turns out that the right-moving fermions, which are massless, are the ones which are invariant under the following map. Phi plus I goes to phi plus I plus phi I psi for some parameter psi. So I can encode this nicely in terms of a nice sequence, which is it's the cohomology of the following sequence. Or actually, let me just write the exact sequence. This is phi I to. I'm going to work now for a model for just a projective space. So this is the familiar map giving me the tangent bundle of Pn. So again, I'm looking only at the right movers. If I look at the left movers, the only thing that changes is that this phi I goes over to the EI. So these EIs are just sections of the tangent bundle to Pn. Now similarly, if I want to restrict this to a hypersurface in Pn, I do that by first defining the hypersurface, and then I can define the tangent bundle to my hypersurface, an x and no n. And again, just playing some bundle games. So these are just where these maps are the dg d phi. So if I didn't want to think about a hypersurface at all, I could just think about these EIs. If I add a hypersurface to get the tangent space, I need to add these functions dg di, where g is some homogeneous polynomial defining my hypersurface. So if I deform away from being 2-2, these will in general be sections of the cotangent bundle. So this is the data, the specifying data. Once I've chosen my coordinates and the hypersurface that I want to study, the special 0-2 data shows up in these E's and J's, sections of the tangent cotangent bundle, which allow me to deform those bundles. Let me skip the twisting. So this is the basic game. We're going to have these special 0-2 bits, and we want to see how the more familiar story of mirror symmetry from the world sheet, from the point of view of the world sheet, modifies when we deform these E's and J's. Okay. Questions at this point? So the story we want to follow is this notion of mirror symmetry as an abelian duality on the world sheet. Mirror symmetry is T-duality from the point of view of the world sheet. So this is based on work from, amongst other people, Morrison, Plesser, and Horry and Vaffa. And the basic idea is to exploit the familiar world sheet story of T-duality, where we have the theory of periodic scalar being mapped to the dual scalar. And I'm going to phrase this in a slightly more general way. I'm going to consider a theory in each of the constructions I'm about to give you. I'm going to consider a theory of the following form. I start off with a theory with two parameters, which is annoyingly simple. And then I'm going to integrate out. I mean, this is going to be defined as some path integral, d phi, and in fact, we'll call this one b, d theta db. We'll put theta tilde over these. Of e to the sum action, theta tilde db. And there are two ways I could do this integral. I could do this one first, or this one first. I'm going to make some assumptions about orders of operations. So this is going to define some map. Pi theta tilde, pi b, just integrating these guys out to give me some effective theory. And I'm going to require that these are exactly identical, so this should look incredibly familiar and suggestive. So I'm going to realize this in a couple of simple examples and then apply it to a 0-2 theory. The simple examples with which I start are going to be exactly integrable theories, theories where I can just exactly solve the partition function. What we're going to get to are 0-2 theories that flow to these interesting manifolds. And we're going to dualize the phases of these chiral fields, of these scalars, which are coordinates on the target space. So this is going to be a realization of t-duality. Now the problem is there, it's an interacting theory. So I can't exactly do the path integral. I can't exactly compute the partition function. However, the supersymmetry, the surviving 0-2 supersymmetry, is enough to protect it perturbatively. And then we have to explicitly do the instanton sum. So then we're going to explicitly do the instanton sum by writing down the most general possible superpotential for the mirror theory. So let me walk through that. So in this case, we start off with an intermediate theory, an upstairs. So if I integrate out b theta tilde, this enforces the constraint that b is closed, which I can locally write as b is d theta. And so I get a theory L is equal to r squared d theta squared. If I integrate out b, on the other hand, I get the constraint that b here is equal to 1 upon r squared d theta tilde, giving me L is equal to 1 upon r squared d theta tilde squared. So this is familiar t-duality. I can add in a gauge theory, a gauge group, and we're going to be interested in gauge theories in a very straightforward fashion. The upshot is going to be that this theory is now coupled to a gauge field, whereas this theory is going to have an additional term, which is going to be of the form theta tilde dA. So now this field, on one side we have a charged field, on the other side we have an uncharged field which couples axially, or is a dynamical theta angle in the world sheet theory. The point is that it's not charged, this is going to be huge, and there's an extra constraint. So here the gauge field is acting as a constraint, here it's acting as a gauge field. This is going to be a very important structure. So in the 2-2 context, this is done in a very lovely construction, explicitly with this form, in a paper with Horry and Vafa. And let me walk through that quickly, and then sketch out the differences for the 0-2 theory. So we're going to start with some horrible beginning theory, which I don't know if I'm really going to even bother writing down. Well, I'll write it down. It's going to have two terms. So this is all a full superspace integral. There's no superpotential or anything interesting. And on the one side, this is going to give us a theory of chiral field, phi bar phi, integral d4 theta. So again, this is in the 2-2 case. So this is just a regular gauge-coupled, I should put it in a gauge-coupling with the 2V, scalar. This is exactly the sort of theory we start off with, a gauge linear sigma model, whose target space is the geometry we're interested in. And what we're going to look at our 0-2 generalizations of this. At the moment, let me stick with 2-2, where it's a little easier to write things down. If we integrate out in the other direction, we get a theory which is rather different. We get a full superspace integral with now an uncharged field y, this should be very familiar to most people in the room, at least many, y real, plus a superpotential of the form y sigma, where sigma is the field strength. This is exactly like before. We have a constraint coming from the gauge potential. This is just acting as a Lagrange multiplier for an uncharged field. Now, an extremely important point. This is an interacting theory. It has gauge interactions. So we run to the infrared. Those gauge interactions become strong. We can't ignore them. So in particular, this classical integrating out of variables is not a reliable way to do the computation. We have to check that these two theories, in fact, give identical correlators. And they don't. They only do classically and semi-classically. But non-perturbatively, thanks to world sheet instantons, there are differences between these two correlators. And using 2-2 supersymmetry, you can completely constrain the form of the corrections to the superpotential over here, which are plus e to the minus y. Now, if I had many fields phi I with charges qi, we get exactly the same form. Now, the key point here is that regardless of what the theory is, I don't have to think at all in writing down the mirror superpotential. This has effectively summed up all the instanton contributions. And that was thanks to 2-2 supersymmetry. Now, to get the interesting structures we want, for example, the chiral ring, a very important step now is integrating out this auxiliary, well, not auxiliary, this effectively Lagrange multiplier of gauge field strength, which is going to give us the constraint. And I forgot to add, write this in the following way, sigma sum and I plus t, where t is the parameter that showed up in the instanton weight, familiar t. We get the constraint sum on I, yi is minus it is equal to 0. This is effectively just a delta function. When we put this into the sum over e to the minus yi's, this leads to a very interesting superpotential. When we then take derivatives with respect to the yi's, or more to the point, with respect to good single-valued coordinates, which in general will be ui is equal to e to the minus yi to some power, depending on the charges, we're then going to get an interesting superpotential of these UIs. And it's the ring coming from this superpotential that we're going to match to the quantum ring on the original side, which receives all the instanton corrections. The important thing here is that this is exact. All instanton corrections have been summed. So if we want to compute the cohomology ring here, we simply do the classical computation of the chiral ring here. In the 0-2 theory, now this is going to be the black box. It follows exactly the same form. The details are somewhat different, and they're rather time-consuming. But the short version is that you start off on this side with a gauge linear sigma model of the form introduced earlier, with some target V over x, with defining functions ei. Now, I'm going to come back to why I haven't included the functions ji, but I've chosen some non-trivial sections of my tangent bundle to deform the tangent bundle away from being the tangent bundle to being some interesting deformation thereof. And, well, the mirror superpotential takes a pleasingly not too complicated form. The exact superpotential of the dual theory is of the form gamma times sum I qi yi, where these are the scalars nearer to the original scalars phi I minus I t. And this is the gauge field strength, which in 0-2 theory is a fermionic field, plus another constraint, sum and I, qi fi, where these fi's are mirror to the gammas, the fermions, the left-moving fermions. Both of these are effectively constraints. Plus, and this is the complicated part, and it's only just complicated, kij fi e to the minus yj. So the form of this superpotential is complete. So this is the analog of the instanton-generated superpotential. It's completely constrained. It can be nothing other than some linear combination of various fermions times e to the minus the scalars. On the other hand, these betas are not universal. In the 2-2 case, we had a single contribution from each scalar of the form e to the minus yi. Coefficient could be absorbed. That was it. Here we have a matrix worth. So we have a finite number, in general a small number, of coefficients that must be computed, because these, in general, depend on the parameters in E. So if I think of E as some holomorphic section, it's got some coefficients of the polynomials, if I've chosen good coordinates, These parameters are the, I'll call them alpha I, are the bundle deformation parameters. They're my bundle moduli. And the betas will in general be functions of the bundle moduli. So our job in a case-by-case fashion is to compute these. So it's not quite as simple as in the 2-2 case, where you do the computation once sometime in 1999 that C is not equal to zero and you're done. Here you have to actually do it case by case, which is slightly non-trivial, but not too difficult. On the bright side, it does not involve doing an infinite sum of instantons, which is pleasing because that's time consuming. Instead, it's a small number of computations on a case-by-case basis. So there are various ways to compute these coefficients BI. Oh, let me first, well, okay, let me tell you about the BIs. There are various ways to compute these betas. One is you could compute explicit correlators. So you could compute a correlator in this theory. You have an explicit mapping between the fields, for example, phi I squared is equal to y plus y bar. And by working in components, you could identify correlators which here vanish unless beta is non-zero. And you can compare them using this map to correlators in this theory that you can compute in a relatively straightforward fashion in an instanton background. Alternatively, you could compute an effective superpotential, following Morse and Plesser, on both sides of the gauge field strengths. I don't need to get into this here, but this bosonic field sigma is actually the field strength for fermionic gauge symmetry, which we've suppressed in this whole presentation. You could compute the effective potential on both sides by integrating out here all the scalars and fermions, and here by doing the same with their mirrors, dy and df. And this gives you two different presentations of what must be an identical effective theory. Effectively, I've done this integral once, and I do it again. I should do that here. And these must give the same result, unless there's something truly problematic about that order of integrals, which on physical grounds we don't expect. And then by comparing those two different presentations, you can constrain the betas in terms of the parameters in the original gauge linear sigma model. Finally, if you really felt like it, you could actually do the full instanton sum. Computing one in the instanton background, and compare the generating functionals. This is a horribly time-consuming thing. You can actually make some serious progress with this. And in particular, in working in the half-twisted theory and using localization arguments, you can actually do these not too badly. So this is actually a work in progress with this student at Harvard. Good. So what's the upshot? The upshot is that, again, we have a simple superpotential that presents effectively the instanton sum of the mirror theory, of the dual theory, which allows us to compute correlators here, for example, of chiral operators, or those cohomology computations, by simply taking a classical computation of the superpotential. In particular, we can get the ring relations by taking derivatives of the superpotential. So some, oops, totally skipped over. Good. So let me give you a couple of examples. In fact, let me give you just one, because I'm running low on time. OK, let's take the example that will show up tomorrow. So I'm going to look at the tangent bundle of P1 cos P1. I'm going to deform it. And I can give you now, in a simple way, the defining data for this deformation. So if I just had P1, or if I just had P1, this would be the map phi I to, let's do. Now I've got two copies. And so here the map is phi I So this would be just the tangent bundle. And I'm going to deform it, for example, with this. There are six, in general, six independent deformations I could do to this map, keeping in mind the fact that these are all projective coordinates and that the coefficients here are also going to turn out to be projective coordinates for exactly the same reason on the bundle moduli space. This particular deformation leads to the following effective superpotential. We have W tilde is equal to gamma times sum on I qi yi minus the key. And let me write this somewhat differently, actually. Let me just effectively integrate out both the gauge field strengths. So this is going to give me a delta function on y1 plus y2 minus it, a delta function on y3 plus y4 minus it tilde, where these are the parameters, the killer parameters of the two p1s to begin with, and a delta on the fermions as well, 1 plus f2, delta f3 plus s4. And finally, our instanton sum, which is going to be w tilde is equal to sum on I fi e to the minus yi. Notice that this is exactly of the, well, trust me on this, and this is exactly the 0-2 reduction of the 2-2 form, plus an additional contribution coming from this deformation, which is of the form alpha upon 2, f1 times e to the minus y3 plus e to the minus y4. So now, let me complete the path integral over these variables. This gives me, effectively, a superpotential in terms of just two of the f's and two of the y's. I'll call the y's y and y bar, and define single-valued variables, which are x is equal to e to the minus y, and x tilde is equal to e to the minus y3. And taking derivatives, dw df, gives me the following relations: x squared plus alpha x bar x tilde is equal to beta, where this is the exponential of t, of it, minus it, tilde squared, tilde beta tilde. So this is the general program. You go through, you calculate these beta coefficients, you compute the chiral ring, and see how the chiral ring of the original theory was deformed. And just 0-2 is giving us a huge restriction on the possible deformations of the quantum cohomology of the chiral ring. So some limitations. So far, this is only a tractable strategy for non-compact Calabi-Yaus, or rather, in general, for toric varieties. In doing this integration, it was extremely important that we had that we could do these integrals. And let me say this a little differently. What we're really doing is we're doing Fourier transform on some periodic coordinate. If we don't have a periodic coordinate, we don't know how to do this. We can't do t-duality. So if you have a toric variety, this is not a problem. There's a nice torus action. If you have a hypersurface in this toric variety, you're in trouble. Because, for example, think of the familiar quintic. Phi 1 to the fifth violates this torus action. Its phase rotation is not a symmetry of the theory anymore. So in general, when we cut out hypersurfaces, whether they're Calabi-Yau or not, when we cut out hypersurfaces of Calabi-Yaus, these strategies will not work even at the classical level, much less doing instanton computations. Now, there are a number of strategies for getting around this. So for example, in the 2-2 case, there's a really lovely strategy worked out, I guess originally by Morrison Plesser, involving doing the calculation in the ambient toric variety and then restricting to a hyperplane class, but restricting to the computation that you want for the hypersurface by putting in insertions of the hyperplane class. Horian Bothley phrased this somewhat differently and turned it into a very beautiful computation in terms of the superpotential periods of the superpotential of the mirror theory. That technology is not well developed for the 0-2 models, although that's something very much in progress. It's a bit of a messy topic. Another limitation is that even for toric varieties, computing these beta coefficients is, in general, a difficult task. Whichever method you choose, even though it's a finite number of coefficients, you have to do some work. And having a nice algorithmic construction for these beta coefficients would be great for just a fairly generic class of gauge linear signal models. But that's something that's turned out to be much more difficult than we anticipated. One nice thing about this so far is that you can see that the Kähler and the bundle, in this case, the only data we have of the metric is the Kähler data. There is no complex structure deformation, P1 plus P1. In this case, we see that the Kähler and bundle moduli are explicitly mixing in the mirror ring. So they're very much on the same footing. And in general, when you go through these duality maps in more interesting cases in detail, you see explicitly that term by term, the coefficients can be mixed combinations of Kähler and bundle moduli. So the fact that they show up on the same footing is highly suggestive. What exactly that means about the mirror geometry, though, we really don't know. And the question we'd really like to answer goes something like this. You start off with some nice geometry, which, say, is some Calabi-Yau. It has some metric moduli space, which, in a horrible abuse of terminology, I'll call MG. And it has deformations into the more general space of bundle deformations. We'll call it MA, or yeah, V. Now, we know that at this 2-2 point, this Calabi-Yau has a good mirror. And it has also a space of deformations, a moduli space, a metric moduli space. And in general, it will have some set of deformations away. Now, it would be nice and natural if these deformations away from being 2-2 map simply into each other. But in general, there's no reason to expect that. The moduli spaces should mix in some horribly complicated fashion in general. Very little constrains this mixing. So these guys could each be independently complicated combination, or complicated functions of the metric moduli. So understanding this geometry is something that we'd very much like to do. In the case of tori, it's relatively straightforward, and you can see that, in fact, locally at least, they factorize. So working this out in explicit cases is something that's in progress, and I think in general we just see that there's often in generically mixing for general geometries. So this is work in progress with René Reinbacher. We don't have anything completely solid yet, and the reason is really simple. Doing this in a sensible way requires having compact cases under control, and that's just a computationally intractable thing at the moment. So our first set of advances on this is trying to develop the techniques for the compact cases. So in particular, we're working on K3. The second strategy is with direct instanton sums. And so here, you get into very delicate details of localization in the half-twisted theory. It's an unpleasant and messy, murky topic. But at least you have a very explicit strategy for making computations. And hopefully that will work out well. There's another strategy, which is entertaining, related to this Schwartz equivalence. So Schwartz points out that if you have a Calabi-Yau, a compact Calabi-Yau, then its A model, which is independent of the complex structure deformations, is isomorphic to the A model of an associated supermanifold. Now, defining what all those words mean is something that really hasn't been done correctly yet. But at least following your nose in this, you can reproduce many of the results of mirror symmetry using world sheet techniques, as has been recently done by Akhnazic and Bafa. The details of that remain to be worked out in some more detail would be good to see. But one might hope that analogous techniques might extend to the 0-2 case. Now, there's no A model for the 0-2 case. So defining this equivalence, defining a putative equivalence, is already very difficult. The bonus of this equivalence is that the supermanifold is automatically toric. So these techniques of dualizing using the torus action is now applicable to a compact Calabi-Yau, because it's equivalent, at least as far as the A model is concerned, to a toric supermanifold. And one can play similar games here, and checking whether, in fact, this is correct is an interesting question. Work in progress. I think I'll stop there.
I Are there any questions? Let's thank the speaker again.